So the last feedback loop that your application should have is the ability to monitor how the users are behaving on your application. So again, traditionally, if it's been a web app, a lot of people are using like Google Analytics. Today, Microsoft has Application Insights, which gives you that user level, but you can also drop it into like iOS apps as well as web apps, as well as instrument your servers. So you kind of get like a more holistic view of what is happening. And so through that, you should be understanding more of the user behaviors and how the servers are operating, and then you can target fixes as they arise, as you need to make adjustments. So when you have a monitoring service, when an issue happens in production, hopefully only the stuff that's really critical to you actually boils down to the developer or the operations team. Things like auto-scaling should be a gate that helps you meet the demand without bugging everybody in the organization that something is having an issue. So again, trying to automate as much as you can to make sure that when you're running stuff in production, you don't get pager calls at 2 a.m. And again, this all leads back to recovering quickly and also the detection side of it, detecting issues as they arise. So in that case, I guess they skipped all their environments and went straight to production to hot fix it. And the monitoring service now is actually, it's not happy, but okay. So one big thing that you need to identify, DevOps or no DevOps, is really how you are going to handle issues when they arise in production. I think historically, pretty much everyone's always thought about rollback strategies. They come at quite a significant cost. So rollback strategy typically, if you look at something like a database change, means that not only do you have to develop the solution that you want on the database, but you have to develop mechanisms to maybe roll back that data to previous state, which can be quite expensive to do. So they're just working on deploying version 2. Version 2 goes out and everyone's head explodes, and now you have an issue. So you go back into how do we roll back to version 1. And this is exactly where I would just bring up the question of it really means that you need to be doing testing, regression testing against various versions of your system. So even in the very least, it would be like a web app with a database. You need to ensure that those can work one version behind or above, which sometimes isn't too bad. But you definitely have to start thinking that way if you want to use rollbacks as your strategy for failures in your production environment. Nice thing is if you do that, when a problem happens, someone can slap a button and roll back and hopefully everything's good. Although we all know that it doesn't quite work like that. So moving over to DevOps, this is something that's been embraced a lot more. It's a roll forward strategy. So I brought up earlier that I was, you know, part of a company that we were doing 200 releases per day. And there's no way we had any rollback strategy. It wasn't going to happen. We had a roll forward strategy. So if you break production, you better fix it as fast as you can. It's not necessarily great. It's not necessarily great on the individual. But it does kind of push the rigor down to hopefully you catch it in development before you release. And when you don't, you make a quick learning saying, I'm never going to do whatever that was again. So there's been a lot of companies that have been really successful with a roll forward strategy. But again, it really probably means that you're quite limber in how you are able to release to production. So by that, I mean, you're going to want to shorten your potential release to production down to at the very least, hours, if not minutes, right? So, let's see. So yeah, I mean, I've worked on a ton of projects, right? And If you look at that mean time to release to production, if you have a few environments stood up, typically it's the 2 to 4 hour time, depending on what you're doing. So the idea of compilation, unit test, testing, going out to a QA environment, having manual interjection, then releasing to a staging environment, then having a business user saying okay, and then releasing to production. That doesn't happen in 10 minutes. But if you want to do something like this, then maybe you need to start removing some of those pieces to really enable that pipeline to be faster while still maintaining a minimum level of quality that you want to happen through that. And a lot of the ways of doing that is to automate like more and more of, say, the testing, whatever those bottleneck processes are that you have. Okay, so it's really this easy if you live in .NET and you're used to Azure. If you right-click on any like C# project, you can add application insights telemetry to your solution. So what this gives you primarily when you're doing it in your project here, this will give you kind of the server-side instrumentation happening, but it channels it through like an Azure backend for you.
Okay, I'm just going to grab that. Was it happy with that? I'm not sure.
Okay, so in essence, all it's doing here, right, is pulling a NuGet package into your project. So it's made a few small tweaks there, added a few JavaScript files. So once you get to the portal, it will show you how to implement the JavaScript component that will do telemetry on the user side, just like Google Analytics does. But those pieces go with the server side. It has a configuration. You can go in there and configure what you want it to be monitoring on your servers, and then it just packages for the NuGet stuff, and then it adds a little bit to the web config. Everybody good with that? So if you're using Azure today, this is how we're doing all the telemetry within what you see from our applications. So when we run a VM, we use Application Insights to provide you with the telemetry of how your server's running. And we also do that for like web applications. So basically, anytime you see a graph, you will see, basically it's being channeled through Application Insights, whether or not you've signed up for it or not. So I'm just making a couple requests to a web app I have running so that I get some graphs here happening. Hopefully that shows up in a second. So this again is a very basic view of Application Insights on a website. Is that going to show up? Let me just make a couple more requests. Okay, I'll try that one. That page is just loading.
Okay, well, we'll just see if that comes up.
Application insights only for Azure Web Apps, or is it also
No. Yeah, for anything. So it'll do like if you're used to like perfmont stuff on servers, it'll do like perfmont stuff. It'll do custom instrumentation on code. It'll do like default IIS kind of code. Yeah, and then if you get into like you can track like button clicks in apps or like on websites and stuff like that, and you'll typically do custom instrumentation. Okay. Is that good?
It's pretty. Where do you send that information to you then? Just present it. Happening to your portal, even if you're IBM?
Yeah, so it's not quite showing up there. You can start creating custom graphs there. You can have it go to Power BI if you want. You can do, we have like, I think it's open source, we have like a web server that you can stand up and then set up your own graphs based on that data. There's a number of different ways. The big one for getting started is within the dashboards. You'll see it happening there. It'll write you out the JavaScript code if you want to throw that on web pages to get that end user kind of telemetry happening. So page view times, navigation flows, things like that happening.
Now let's see if this is a demo fail or not, because there really should be some data in one of these. Yeah, it's not liking me. Yeah, so I was making requests on this website and it should be flowing through here as well.
Yeah, and so when these are working, you'll get like the ability to drill down and see things in much more detail and add customization to it. So, and it's also really, I mean, it's really good that, so Azure being the back end for this, it's providing you with, I think it's 5 million telemetry events per month for free. And we're using event hubs, if you know that technology, which is made for like extreme scale. So on your clients shouldn't be really that affected by adding this to it. We also use AMQP as the transport mechanism, which is a fairly lightweight protocol for sending your telemetry through the system. Any questions? Okay, so we got like 10 minutes. I think that's pretty good, actually. Okay. So I'm a really big, what would I say? I think the configuration is really, really important. It's typically what I've seen to actually like break production is usually kind of injected at the last step and doesn't really go through the same rigor as maybe code did. So I really recommend looking at configuration management as a piece of that, especially in the world where you can deploy very quickly. What I typically do is really limit what I have in configuration, meaning that I only stick things in configuration when they change per environment, and the rest gets quote-unquote hard-coded. Hopefully it then gets tested, but it's definitely not as dynamic, maybe as if you had way more values in configuration that can change per environment and you don't really quite know the state of what is affecting what. So it's definitely something to think about. Typically, this should go through some sort of check-in process, and then again, automating the configuration of that piece of infrastructure or that app during deployment. So you can do that obviously with Visual Studio Online, and then a lot of people also drive configuration changes through with Octopus, right? So you'll have it in your code, but you'll be driving it through one of those mechanisms. Again, the more testing you can do, configuration, infrastructure, and code is beneficial. And it's really just to mitigate those changes that happen in production without having the same rigor as everything else. Yay, automation. So Azure has a lot of different ways to do like scheduling and automation, and we have a new offering. I don't know if we have a slide on it, Dev Test Labs. But the idea being is if you're gonna invest in this infrastructure as code, we've invested in deleting all of your infrastructure, which is really great news. So Dev Test Labs is really aimed at developers that have a development, maybe a CI, a test environment, those kind of environments. And if you have infrastructure as code, it's pretty cool just to pull the whole plug, let's say at 9 p.m. at night, and then redeploy everything at 7 a.m. in the morning. All you're doing is saving money because most people aren't testing at 2 a.m. Or in the case where someone does want to test at 2 a.m., they can flick the light switch, have everything deployed in 5 or 10 minutes, back up and running, and keep going. So there's a lot of stuff that we're doing there to basically save you money. So I really recommend looking at that. And especially once you're in the position of doing infrastructure as code, you're basically in the position to keeping money in your pocket very easily. And the other thing there, I guess, to note is, I mean, I've seen companies do this. It's been a little harder, I guess, historically. But you can also have environments per developer spun up and down, right? Whereas historically, maybe you'd have more shared resources, right? This way, you can really have like an isolated environment, do your testing, and ensure that you're not being maybe hurt by someone else doing their work next to you or something like that on like load testing and servers. And has anyone done any like testing in production? Maybe no one wants to put up their hand with that one. So this comes back. Actually, I was laughing too. Like a couple of years ago, Facebook got in a lot of trouble because they do like social engineering in production or whatever, and people thought that was really bad, right? But at the end of the day, a lot of people do view software as just a test, right? Traction test if you're a startup, or like, is this feature worthwhile to anybody? Let's test it, right? So that's kind of this model. So a lot of people have moved to hypothesis-driven development, and this is a lot of what we have kind of comes out of what I've seen a lot around marketing A/B testing. So the idea that we can shunt load to different servers to see what the behaviors are like. So the behaviors of the servers, but potentially also the behaviors of the users, right? So like one thing, so let's say you want to add like a search feature that will take you like 6 months to develop. Maybe it's good just to put on your 10% a search text box and just track who clicks on it, right? And if no one ever clicks on that search box, don't invest in actually developing search because no one cares, they'll never use it, right? So this is kind of the methodology you can take to this. Like, why do anything unless you can prove that somebody wants you to do it? And so that can go, again, from user usability, color testing, down to like server performance stuff. And so we're building more and more of that out in Azure for you. Obviously, if you're going to do any of that, you're going to need to capture that telemetry and get that feedback loop happening so you know what to act on. And lastly, the most fun, has anyone heard of Chaos Monkey? Yeah, okay, so going back to the Netflix world, and I mean, like my joke there was if you have no internet, you can still watch Netflix somehow. And they've really done that through what they call Chaos Monkey. There's one for Azure these days that's maintained open source. This is really getting into a very highly sophisticated environment in terms of the fault tolerance that Netflix is able to handle. And they do it by this program basically that just starts pulling the plugs out of machines randomly within their environments. And Netflix has gone so far as they do this in production all the time, and it doesn't affect them. Right, so that's getting really to a point where, I mean, we all know they run on AWS, right? Where they don't care if AWS, half of it goes down, somehow they're still gonna be able to serve you videos, right? So their SLA goes beyond even what their cloud provider's SLA gives them. And so one way to do that is through fault injection, right? So pulling the plugs, seeing how applications handle it, going back, figuring out how they can handle it better, and over time, getting into a very robust state. Oh, sorry, I'm supposed to have more animations when I talk. Lightning bolts, yes, lightning bolts. But there is one open source on GitHub for Azure if you're ever interested in playing with it. Okay. So with Azure websites today, we have what we call slots, and between those slots, you can shunt a percentage of your users or your requests between them. So it's really good for experimentation, maybe A/B testing, if you're familiar with that. And then when you're ready, like when you feel that production B there is ready for prime time, then you can just move it up to production A and get rid of your production B. And so it's a good strategy to mitigate any risk as you're deploying new software. Oops, sorry. I think I maybe overstepped on that first slide because there's just more of the same, really. Just really recommend having some level of telemetry. I'm sure you do already. The more you have, the more you can really enable some of these DevOps practices because it's a little more holistic than just looking at, you know, your CPU. You might want to look at how users are behaving as well and things like that and the relationship between the two. False injection, again, pretty complex, probably really hard to do well. Definitely something to think about, and you can definitely, at the very least, you should be thinking about it from the terms of like, you know, Twitter's fail whale and things like that, right? So if your database goes away, you should probably have a "we'll be back soon" message for your users. And once you do that, maybe you start thinking more deeply about how your app can maintain at least some level of serviceability through any sort of outage. Or maybe you automate the creation of a new database and migrate data. Yeah, and so you should become obviously way more fault tolerant through that, and then your mean time to recovery should go down, down, down.